Now we've completed the pathway, it's useful to consider the total number of ATP molecules produced by this process. If we recap, we can say that at the activation stage of the pathway, we use up ATP molecules at two reactions. So starting off with one glucose molecule, we use up two ATP for those early phosphorylation reactions. The later stages of the pathway involve two reactions which produce ATP, and bearing in mind that there are two sets of the triose sugars coming through these reactions, that makes a yield of four ATP molecules. So bearing in mind what we've used up and what we've produced, the net yield of ATP is two ATP molecules from one glucose molecule. We should note that these are the yields of ATP under circumstances when there is very little oxygen available to the tissue, and if there is oxygen present, then the pyruvate can be metabolized further through the mitochondrial stages of metabolism to produce a much higher yield of ATP. But under anaerobic conditions with no oxygen, the cell has to make do with two ATP molecules as its yield. Now, an important feature of the glycolysis pathway is that it can continue to operate in the presence and the absence of oxygen. In the absence of oxygen, or low oxygen tensions, are described as being anaerobic conditions. So when oxygen supplies to the tissues are limited, pyruvate can no longer be metabolized further to carbon dioxide because the two later stages of metabolism require oxygen. So when oxygen supplies are limited, pyruvate is converted to lactate or lactic acid, not because the lactate is particularly important, but in order to allow the conversion of the cofactor NADH, its reduced form, back again to NAD. This is because there are limited concentrations of these cofactors in the cytoplasm of the cell, and when all the NAD has been reduced to NADH, the glycolysis pathway would cease to function. So there needs to be an alternative process over and beyond the mitochondrial cytochrome system for reoxidizing the NADH back to NAD. One of the ways in which the cells, particularly skeletal muscles, can allow glycolysis to continue in the absence of oxygen is to take the two end products of glycolysis, that's pyruvate and the reduced form of NADH, and react the two together in the presence of the enzyme lactate dehydrogenase so that the hydrogens from NADH are transferred to the pyruvate, which then becomes lactate or lactic acid. And the structures of those molecules are shown in the next diagram. So here we have the reaction that we've just described, catalyzed by the enzyme lactate dehydrogenase. And at the top there is shown the structure of pyruvate, the end product of glycolysis. And the enzyme lactate dehydrogenase in skeletal muscle is very effective in converting pyruvate to lactate, the product shown at the bottom of the diagram, by transferring the two hydrogens from the reduced cofactor NADH, transferring those to the fuel molecule, and the NADH is then converted back to NAD. This will allow glycolysis to continue in skeletal muscle. The lactate diffuses out of tissues like skeletal muscle into the bloodstream, and then as the bloodstream flows through the liver, liver cells are capable of taking up the lactate and converting it back using the same enzyme, lactate dehydrogenase, but a different isoenzyme form of the protein, converting the lactate back to pyruvate. And then the liver can deal with the pyruvate either by metabolizing it through the TCA cycle to carbon dioxide, getting more energy out of the molecule, or in some circumstances converting the pyruvate back to glucose through a process which we'll be discussing later called gluconeogenesis. The glycolysis pathway does not occur in isolation, and we do need to consider the subsequent fate of pyruvate as it goes on to be metabolized to other end products. This is a useful summary diagram which we can look at section by section. What we've just described is the conversion of pyruvate to lactic acid under conditions where there's very limited oxygen supplies to the tissues, such as skeletal muscle working at full power and squeezing capillaries, so there's very slow delivery of oxygen to the tissues, or in cells like red cells, which have no mitochondria and therefore no capacity to convert pyruvate to carbon dioxide through the TCA cycle. Under these circumstances, pyruvate is converted to lactate, and that's the final end product of glycolysis. In most tissues, most of the time, the pyruvate is converted to acetyl-CoA. Then the acetyl-CoA enters the citric acid cycle, or the TCA cycle, and then through the reactions of the citric acid cycle, that two-carbon unit acetyl-CoA is metabolized to the final end products, carbon dioxide. But we need to emphasize this process requires adequate oxygen, and then the aerobic end product of glycolysis will be carbon dioxide. If we eat more carbohydrates than we use up through our energy demands, then the excess calories can be converted into fats. And the way this is done is that the carbohydrate units are metabolized through the glycolysis pathway. Pyruvate is then converted to the 2-carbon unit acetyl-CoA, and then the process of lipid synthesis will convert the acetyl-CoA units into long-chain fatty acids, which are then stored in tissues like adipose tissue. So this is the way the body deals with excess calories that we take in over and above our energy demands. There is one other reaction of pyruvate we should consider, and that is the way in which the pyruvate can be metabolized to ethanol or ordinary drinking alcohol. And we should emphasize this occurs not in our tissues, but in microorganisms, particularly in yeast. We mentioned at the beginning of the presentation that the glycolysis pathway has different functions in different specialized tissues, and we can summarize some of these points here. In skeletal muscle, the glycolysis pathway is very important for ATP production during intense exercise. Red blood cells depend on this pathway because it's the only pathway for ATP production, because mature red cells in the circulation have no mitochondria and therefore no capacity for metabolizing fats or for the aerobic metabolism of glucose through the TCA cycle. Brain is also highly dependent on the glycolysis pathway because the brain has very limited capacity for metabolizing fats because they cannot easily cross the blood-brain barrier. So the aerobic metabolism of glucose is important in brain. The glycolysis pathway is carefully regulated, either increasing its rate of glucose utilization or decreasing the rate of metabolism according to the needs of the cell. Situations that would result in an increased rate of glycolysis are the needs for intense muscle work and exercise and a high usage of ATP, or after eating a high carbohydrate meal, when the blood sugar level rises, there will be high insulin levels circulating in the bloodstream, and then tissues like liver and muscle respond by a high rate of glycolysis. Situations where there would be a decreased rate of glycolysis would be in the fasting state, where the body switches over to using fats rather than glucose, and that will be characterized by a high level of glucagon as the hormone in the bloodstream. The most rapid way of regulating the glycolysis pathway is by altering the activity of the third enzyme in the pathway, the enzyme phosphofructokinase, which is an enzyme with allosteric properties. The enzyme reaction is shown here. Phosphofructokinase is responsible for the conversion of fructose 6-phosphate to the product fructose 1,6-bisphosphate, and uses a molecule of ATP to carry out that reaction. The enzyme shows allosteric properties and is inhibited if the concentration of ATP rises in the cell, which is an indication that the cell has plenty of the high energy cofactor ATP present to carry out its activities. The enzyme is also inhibited by high concentrations of citrate, which is not an end product of this pathway, but is an intermediate of the next pathway, the TCA cycle, into which the pyruvate will eventually be metabolized. So both ATP and citrate are indications that the cell has plenty of high energy intermediates. These act as inhibitors of the enzyme and will therefore slow down the activity of this enzyme and slow down the flow of metabolites through the whole glycolysis pathway. And we can refer to this as feedback inhibition. The enzyme is interesting in that it has a binding site for another cofactor, AMP, adenosine monophosphate, which can be considered as the hunger signal of the cell. When the cell is using up ATP at a very rapid rate, ATP is broken down to ADP, and then some of those molecules are broken down to adenosine monophosphate. The concentration of AMP rises in the cell. This is really an indication that the cell is hungry for more high energy molecules and needs to stimulate the glycolysis pathway. AMP levels, therefore, as they rise, begin to activate in an allosteric fashion the activity of the enzyme phosphofructokinase. This will increase the activity of this key enzyme, and as it's the rate limiting step of the whole pathway, increasing the activity of phosphofructokinase will increase the overall rate of the entire metabolic pathway. As we come to the end of this presentation, it's useful to summarize the key features of the glycolysis pathway. The first point is to mention how important it is. It's the main breakdown pathway that produces ATP, which is present in all tissues and uses glucose freely available from the bloodstream. It's the only energy-yielding pathway that can continue function in the presence or the absence of oxygen. And this makes the pathway particularly important in red blood cells, which have no mitochondria, and in skeletal muscle. The energy yields are low. 2 ATP are produced for each molecule of glucose, but the pyruvate can then go on to enter the mitochondria for further aerobic metabolism, giving rise to further ATP production, a total of about 30 ATP molecules for each glucose unit if oxygen is present. And then finally, the pathway in the liver is also important for producing intermediates that are needed for the synthesis of fats and certain amino acids.